Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart, the most listened to internet radio show in the nonprofit sector, dedicated to helping your charity succeed. It's no secret that combining online and offline techniques is the key to modern-day fundraising success, and practical advice is what you need. The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart is the perfect landing point to learn from experts around the world who provide advice you can use. Ted Hart is without a doubt one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. Also a successful author, his books range from successful online fundraising to the use of social media and how to make your nonprofit green. Guests on The Nonprofit Coach are leaders in their field who share tips and trade secrets for nonprofit management and fundraising success. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, Ted and his guests help you and your organization move to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. This is a live call-in show. Add your voice by calling 347-324-3080. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at tedhart.com. Click on Radio. Don't forget to dial 347-324-3080. Now, welcome the host of The Nonprofit Coach, Ted Hart.
And welcome here to the latest edition of The Nonprofit Coach. Thank you for joining us for 5 years. Hard to believe that The Nonprofit Coach radio show is celebrating its fifth anniversary today. So in honor of our anniversary, we are looking forward to celebrating our happy birthday, our happy fifth anniversary today with some of our top-rated guests here on The Nonprofit Coach of all time. When we get to page two today, we're going to have Mark Sutton with us, followed by Linda Lysakowski, Kay Sprinkle Grace, and John Murcott. They are all with us today to help celebrate the fifth anniversary of The Nonprofit Coach. But as always here, once a month here on The Nonprofit Coach, we are graced with the presence of Ava Aldrich, who is here not only for the CFRE Minute today, but Ava, welcome back here to The Nonprofit Coach. Where are you?
At AFP's International Conference in Baltimore, and it's a thrill to be here, and it's also a thrill to be able to wish you a happy fifth anniversary. That's great what The Nonprofit Coach is doing for the sector.
Well, thank you. And, of course, CFRE has been one of our favorite projects to promote here on The Nonprofit Coach. We believe it's extremely important. Now, I want to get into the CFRE Minute, but we can hear sort of in the background noise that you're at the AFP International Conference. What have been some of the highlights of the conference so far?
Well, I think in addition to the great fundraising educations provided by, you know, some of the stars in the sector, also, too, there have been some wonderful general sessions with Whoopi Goldberg, Seth Godin, Isabel Allende. So really, this is a place to come not only for great fundraising, education, and networking, but also for really having your thoughts sort of provoked, if you will, and really have some great thinkers like Seth Godin share their knowledge and make you think about what you're doing and what's coming in the future.
Re-energize and get those batteries raring to go for the year ahead. You're up in Baltimore, Maryland this year for the AFP International. So let's change our gears here for the purpose in which Ava Aldrich joins us once a month, and that is the CFRE Minute.
Yes. Well, one thing that does have to do here with Baltimore, I was just so happy to be able to see that CFRE swept the awards here at the conference. So if I can, I'd like to give a special shout-out to Penelope Cagney, CFRE, David M. Huffine, CFRE, Richard K. Martin, CFRE, Joyce Mitchell Antoine, CFRE, and Joan B. Black, CFRE, who were the big award winners here at the conference and honored for their outstanding contributions to the profession.
So I think it's an indication. The common theme that you just mentioned there is CFRE earned by each and every one of those. So what is it about being CFRE that makes these people stand out?
Now, I think the people who get their CFRE, and just like you said, they are leaders in the profession. They're committed to the profession. They're committed to best practices. And they are committed to being the best fundraisers possible by continuing their learning and their education. And so when I see CFRE, that tells me someone who's going to be a professional in the profession today, but also going to be keeping up with what needs to happen in the profession tomorrow.
It just says something about you when you stand voluntarily to be tested and to stand with your peers in your support of your own profession.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons, too, why we're always happy to be here at AFC. Now, I would encourage any CFRE who's at the conference this year or in coming years, stop by our CFRE International booth. Just seeing the enthusiasm of the individuals who want to know more about the credential and how the credential can help them along their career path and help support ethics in the profession. It's just a great, great thing.
I hear it's a very active vendor hall this year. Is that because CFRE is there?
Absolutely, Ted. I'm sure that's the key reason.
You're throwing the big parties. You're throwing the big parties up there in Baltimore. Well, we're thrilled for the award winners. Of course, we're thrilled to have the CFRE designation noted so highly at the AFP professional conference in Baltimore. And Ava Aldrich, thank you again for always bringing us up to date and being on the ground with your CFREs and with those who seek the designation. We look forward to having you back here on the Nonprofit Coach next month for the CFRE Minute.
Great. Well, thank you, Ted. Again, happy anniversary.
Enjoy the conference. That's Ava Aldrich from CFRE International. You can find out more information about CFRE at CFRE.org. Next up here on Page One News, here on this fifth anniversary edition of the Nonprofit Coach, Courtney Cherico is here with us. And Courtney, you're a new correspondent for us over at GuideStar. So you're going to be sharing with us the updates from GuideStar. Welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach.
Thank you, Ted, and congratulations on your fifth anniversary. Thank you so much for being a supporter of GuideStar and the nonprofit sector.
Well, we sure are supporters of GuideStar, the important work that you do. Since you're sort of new to the Nonprofit Coach and we always have new listeners, I'll just remind people in the six pillars of success that we promote here on the Nonprofit Coach for nonprofit organizations that want to succeed online, the first and foremost important thing that you can do online is have a strong website and mobile presence with up-to-date information, easy to access for your donors and your supporters. And the number two most important thing that you can do online is to have a full, well-thought-out GuideStar strategy. So that's where we put GuideStar in our top six ways to succeed online. So, Courtney, I'm taking some of your time. What's new over at GuideStar?
Thank you, Ted. Well, the first thing I want to mention today is we have an upcoming free webinar on demystifying the Form 990, tips, tricks, and traps of the Form 990. This will be Wednesday, April 15th at 1 p.m. with Virginia Gross of Polsinelli PC and Dave Moha of Cap and Crowds LLP. So as all of our listeners know, the Form 990 is the cornerstone of the nonprofit sector. Each year you have to fill it out and you run into the same questions. Am I doing this right? Have I missed anything? What has changed? Right in time for tax season, we've brought in the experts to help guide you. So to register for this free webinar, please visit www.guidestar.org/webinars. And from there, you can also visit our webinar archives, which have tons of free presentations surrounding topics on how to be a better nonprofit.
And one of the things that we talk about here on the show is how nonprofit organizations do not pay enough attention to the 990. They oftentimes may just view it as a tax return for their nonprofit. But yet, Courtney, the 990 is now your most public document because it is available to the public by design on GuideStar.
Yes, and I'm so happy you mentioned that because we at GuideStar display about nonprofits more than just the 990 information. In addition to that, we encourage nonprofits to update their GuideStar Exchange nonprofit profiles on the GuideStar Exchange. And nonprofits, they already have profiles on GuideStar.org based on the 990 info, but they may not have claimed or updated their profile yet. And these profiles are viewed more than 12 million times in 2014 alone. The data travels well beyond Geisler.org to our data distribution networks of more than 200 websites and organizations, such as all major U.S. donor advised funds, websites like Just Give, Network for Good, and Volunteer Match, thousands of private and community foundations, and online giving portals. So remember, if nonprofits claim their profile, they can even start collecting donations right on Geisler.org. Getting started on updating your profile is so easy. It takes less than 1 hour to get to the bronze participation level, where you can prove your commitment to transparency. So if you want to get started, I encourage everyone to go to www.guidestar.org/exchange.
And you just brought up such an important part of why we think GuideStar is so important. It is about transparency. It is about sharing information and going beyond, as you said, beyond the 990. But, of course, it starts with, and you have this webinar coming up, on having a well-written 990 that does complete the information that the IRS is looking for, but also positions the information and data for your organization in a smart way.
Exactly. Better data, better decisions, better world. That's what GuideStar is all about.
Well, I love that tagline. That's terrific. Courtney, you've done a fantastic job here on your inaugural visit here on the Nonprofit Coach. We're celebrating our fifth anniversary here today, and so I'm going to thank you for your time, and we're going to head on over to our first Page 2 expert. Courtney, thank you for being with us here on the Nonprofit
thank
Coach.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Well, first up here on the Nonprofit Coach fifth anniversary show is no stranger to anniversary shows. Mark Sutton is here with us. He is now with FrontStream, so I'm going to ask him to reintroduce himself to our audience. But Mark Sutton was our very first guest here on the Nonprofit Coach 5 years ago. Mark, welcome back.
Ted, thanks so much. And before I get going, just want to say happy anniversary again. I think every time we have one of these shows, we kind of marvel at kind of all that you've accomplished, and 5 years is a real milestone. So congratulations.
It does seem like a significant milestone, and I want to sort of explore that with you, given your vast knowledge and history in the nonprofit sector. But just because you've made some changes over the last year, why don't you reintroduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, absolutely. So just, kind of going back, really to kind of, where you and I first got acquainted, Ted, I started a company back in 2003 called First Giving, really one of the first peer-to-peer, or if you think about it, crowdfunding type companies. That was an offshoot of Just Giving in the UK. I really ran that for about 6 years, and from there went on to join a great company that was Toronto-based called Artez Interactive, which did similar sorts of things in terms of helping individuals and organizations raise money. Sort of interestingly, both organizations were acquired about 12 months apart by a company called FrontStream. So, now under the umbrella of FrontStream, which is doing some pretty amazing things. And I've been at FrontStream now for over a year and a half. And the company is really bringing together kind of best of capabilities, from donating to fundraising to crowdfunding, CRM capabilities, and even corporate and social responsibility with employee giving, matching, and volunteering programs. So the vision and kind of what we've been spending a lot of time over the past year has been integrating these platforms. And I think that, a big theme and sort of a shift that I've observed in the period that I've been, involved with fundraising and technology has been the movement of things from the point solution to the more integrated type solution, recognizing that these things are no longer just standalone activities within the organization. And
all these strategies are starting to come together now, aren't they, Mark? I mean, we started together in sort of this theory of, would nonprofits use the web successfully? Would donors even give online? We founded together the E. Philanthropy Foundation that had a mission of sort of breaking through that noise and helping nonprofits and for-profits come together in that space. Mobile then starts coming together. Social media starts coming on the scene. And now all of those are integrating together for smart strategy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that, you know, again, over the years, we've talked about, you know, I remember kind of going way back to the early days where there was, you know, online donations. You know, will it work? Is it only a certain – I remember talking about it was only a certain segment of the population that would do it because they understood it. And now it's just – it's just a given. And similar conversations about social media and even mobile, one of the things that stands out over the past year is I remember in the past you and I have talked about the role of mobile. It's emerging. Really interesting for us, we this past year, one of the major events that we work with had more than 50% of their donations made on a mobile device. So not visits, not click-throughs, more than 50% of the donations. And to give you an idea, this is an event that raised well over $10 million. So yeah. It's one of those things
that,
where it's really coming to maturity.
We're hearing those stories over and over again because donors are interacting with nonprofits in a way that they want to interact with nonprofits, in a way that's more natural for donors because they carry their mobile device with them.
Right.
They know how to use and they have expectations. So the challenge for nonprofits is how they are integrating these new tools. And we've always talked about them as tools. This is not actual fundraising. These are tools that help in the effort to build relationships and give people the opportunity to give. And so you and I have been there for the long haul. And I think, this is another juncture that we're in right now is the smart integration of social media, mobile, web, all of those working together with email, and none of those have been thrown out. All of those are important to a strategy. How you use those, how you phase those is extremely important. So we certainly have history together. We've had history together on this show. And I did want to take some time to ask you to sort of muse on that point just a little bit. What do you think this show has meant over the last 5 years? Where do you think it should go in the future? Should it continue? What are your thoughts on the Nonprofit Coach?
Well, I think it's really been important. So much has changed, and I think that so much will continue to change as well. And you know, in my opinion, one of the great bits of value that the Nonprofit Coach has brought is, you know, just I think a general, you know, discussion and acknowledgement of the latest trends and the things that are going on, the things that are topical that are on people's minds. It's been practical in a lot of ways where there's been discussion of some of the best practices and kind of, you know, bringing in people that are actually, sharing the things that are working or things that aren't working. And there's also very practical tips. So, you know, from my perspective, I think that's really what the show is meant from my perspective. And as I look at it going forward, you know, I think that sort of forum for discussion about what's going on. You and I were just touching on some things that could go into much greater detail on about sort of what does this kind of integration mean as things come together. But then there's also a vision aspect to it as well, and I think that's something that the Nonprofit Coach brings to the audience as well in terms of where are things going and some good ideas and discussion about that.
What do you think beyond sort of the electronic, the digital, the web, are some of the directions that the Nonprofit Coach should be exploring in the future?
You know, one of the things that I see that is sort of built upon the technology, it's the processes. And, you know, in thinking a bit about kind of, how things come together, and you mentioned it before, Ted, social and mobile and online and just kind of as different elements come together, it's not just about the, movement of data or the kind of the mechanisms of bringing things together. I think it goes to the next level in terms of how does the organizations or the practitioners' processes and use cases kind of change as a result of that? And it's something that we're starting to see and kind of engage, many of the organizations that we work with. And I almost think that there's kind of a level of hierarchy where you've got integration bringing data and functionality together. And that's nice, but it's not the important piece, in my opinion. I think that from there you start to have insights, you know, almost like a 360-degree, you know, view of whether it's volunteers or fundraisers or donors or board members. And that's nice, but that it also, I think, goes beyond that, where you then leverage that to facilitate better engagement and ultimately action, and then really ultimately having an impact. So I think that as
we
look ahead,
isn't that topic that you're mentioning right now sort of the elusive big data that, you know, people talk about but don't know what they're actually saying, is that you actually have a lot of information that can help inform where you should be going, and a lot of nonprofits just simply don't access it or use it.
That's it. And I think that it's helping to understand how you go from the actions, and a lot of the tools have automated actions, to having the data, looking at the data, and also, you know, whether you're a practitioner, kind of understanding what that data means, you know, other than something that you simply show to the board or report to your boss, but how does that influence your behaviors? Then also, I think for organizations, you know, like ours that are about enablement, it's how do you build some of that intelligence into the tools itself so that, you know, we don't look at integration as simply being getting data from one point to another or incorporating functionalities, but it's helping to build upon these insights to drive an impact.
And isn't that really the key to all of this, is that you can't allow yourself to become paralyzed by the enormity of the data that now is available to you, because that's just the way things are today. You have to utilize the tools to be able to make decisions as you go, which means the tools have to be smarter.
The tools absolutely have to be smart. I think the data, you're right, I always like to ask the question, so what? So when I see data, it's like, so what? So much of it is, it's interesting at one level, but to what degree? Some of it, I think, I asking that question, not in the facetious sort of way, but how does this help me? What do I do because of this that helps me advance my mission, is kind of the question, because you're right, Ted, there's so much data out there. It's really kind of putting the thought to what's the information that you need that's going to help drive you forward.
We've had 5 years of the Nonprofit Coach, and we cover so many different topics from governance to fundraising to boards of directors and strategic planning, and of course the online, electronic, and digital that you and I have been, you know, sort of on the edge always looking for where are those solutions. How does all that add up for nonprofits? We have hundreds of podcasts now that get thousands of listens. It seems that there's something more going on than just the episodic weekly show.
Well, there certainly is. I think that, you know, so many of the things, Ted, that you're discussing right now, I think that one thing is that, you know, now there can be a forum or a discussion like this, and it can happen on a regular basis. And I think that, you know, in the past, we all used to depend on having to go to conferences, which are still incredibly valuable. And I myself just got back from AFP yesterday, but I think that, you know, now with the media and podcasts like this, social media, these kinds of discussions happen real time, and people are connecting like never before. So I think that's advancing a lot of the things that you just mentioned in terms of how we think about this. So it feels to me like there's been a very rapid rate of evolution on a lot of these fronts, and I think that we're going to continue to see that over the next period of time.
There sure have. Now, Mark, do you have to rush off, or can you stay with us as we bring our next guest in?
No, please proceed. I'll be happy to hang along and help out and chime in if needed or helpful.
Terrific. Well, stay right where you are. We're going to be right back after this break.
Thanks, Ted.
Right. Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. Click on radio links. If you're listening live today, the phone lines are open. Call in and ask a question by dialing 347-324-3080. Now, back to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart.
And big program note, Mark was mentioning he just came back from AFP. Ava Aldrich is at AFP on the ground in Baltimore, Maryland right now. And next week's show here on the Nonprofit Coach, 12 noon next Tuesday, we will have Penelope Cagney, who is half of the winning team for the AFP Skystone Partners Prize for Research. They will be, or she will be here with us live here on the Nonprofit Coach, talking about her work, global fundraising, how the world is changing the rules of philanthropy, and that's published by Wiley. So please make a note, Penelope Cagney will be with us here live on the Nonprofit Coach next week at 12 noon Eastern. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, joining us is another favorite here on the Nonprofit Coach. It's our fifth anniversary show. Welcome back, Linda Lysakowski.
Hi, Ted. How are you? And happy anniversary.
Well, thank you. Well, Linda, you have been with us for all 5 years for a variety of different ways, from your consulting firm to the important work that you're doing with Charity Channel. We're really honored to have you back here as we're celebrating. And we've got Mark Sutton still live here with us, and he just came back from the AFP conference. And Linda, I wanted to ask you, we're sort of taking stock in 5 years of the Nonprofit Coach. What has it meant, and what do you think it should be doing in the future? Should it continue?
Well, I think definitely the answer to the last question is yes, it should definitely continue. And I really just heard the tail end of Mark's comment, but it was funny, as I was listening to him, I thought, well, he just stole my thunder, because I was going to say something very similar to what he was talking about. And that is, this is the first year since 1988 that I have not been able to get to the AFP conference due to some illness that I've had myself. And I thought, boy, I'm really going to miss all my friends, seeing them in person. And while it's great to see people in person, one of the things that I think has changed, certainly in my career, and I think the Nonprofit Coach has been a big part of this, is that 5 years ago I was really active and out consulting and traveling and on the road a lot, and like a lot of other road warriors, I think, just got so sick of the traveling and constantly being on the go. And while I love being there in person to meet with clients and to speak at conferences and things like that, I realized probably about the same time the Nonprofit Coach was getting started was that there's such a broader audience out there that you can't reach possibly by consulting, because you just can't take on that many clients, and physically it's impossible to be in 12 places at one time. So I've really changed the focus on my consulting work, where I'm doing a lot more online and virtual consulting and through things like GoToMeeting and other programs, where I can be talking to a live audience, but they might be, I was in a meeting actually through AFP where one person was on the phone in Australia where it was 3 a.m. I really admired her for getting on a phone at 3 a.m. But I've had people from all over the world on some of my conferences, and it's one of the reasons I started focusing so much on writing, was that I realized you can reach such a broader audience, and there's so many thousands of people out there waiting for this information, and yet they don't have the time, or maybe they don't have the money to travel to conferences, or they just don't want to take that much time out of their day or out of their week to go to a conference. And things like the Nonprofit Coach and other virtual learning opportunities, I think, are really the wave of the future, because it's a great way to, A, save your organization money, and most nonprofits are always looking at ways to do that rather than getting on a plane, spending $200+ a night for a hotel and all the other things that go along with attending conferences. So I think these virtual conferences and online learning opportunities are really the wave of the future, because as consultants and as writers, we can reach such a greater audience. And for the audience, they can sit in their car and listen to these things. They can sit in their office and close the door. They can, you know, if it's recorded, they can turn it on and listen to half of it now and half of it later. So I think these opportunities have drastically change the way a lot of consultants do business, but also change the way nonprofits do business, because they now have at their fingertips top-notch consultants that they wouldn't be able to access if their organization had to pay to fly these people in from Oklahoma or Florida or where they happen to be located.
But it's so interesting that you bring that up, Linda, because our producer for the show, Diane Peach, and I, when we're talking about, and she's pitching different people that want to get on the show, and you know, we always sort of err on the side of bringing people on who have relevant information, particularly for small to mid-sized nonprofits that don't have the budgets but need access to people like you and Mark. And it's interesting that I get emails from people that over time they sort of feel like they've gotten to know you. They've gotten to know, you know, Mark and Kay and John. And you know, we have some regulars who come on, and certainly we have the CFRE minutes. We've got CFRE as a partner. We've got GuideStar as a partner, AFP as a partner, Wiley Charity Channel. And it's sort of an ecosystem of learning that I don't think we really envisioned 5 years ago, but each and every one of you bring your own expertise, and it really does seem to matter, and the listenership just keeps growing. I mean, thousands of listeners to podcasts. Of course, it depends on the topic. Some topics are hotter than others, but it continues to sort of amaze me at, you know, the wide number of people who sort of come to this. And I wonder, you know, are there specific topics that you think the future will be directed by? Do you think it's the familiarity of some of our authors? Obviously, 5 years is sort of, I think, a good time for us to sort of take stock in. Why is this show still so popular, and why does it seem to be growing?
Well, I think the topics are the answer to why it's still popular and why it's growing, because I think you cover things like the latest cutting-edge technology like crowd fundraising and social media fundraising, but also some of the tried and true things like, well, how do you get your board involved in fundraising, and how do you build a development plan, and how do you ask for a major gift? So I think the variety of speakers that you have coming on as guests and people who have written books get to talk about such a broad range of topics and things that typically you think, well, gosh, I have to send my board to hear this in person, but maybe sending their board a copy of the podcast and on something like how to ask for a major gift is another way to expand your audience. So I think as long as your topics are relevant and you're covering the basics but also the new trends, I think sometimes we get so caught up in new trends that we forget there's still some basic things about fundraising that don't change and that we need to focus on those as well. And I think your show's done an excellent job of focusing on those tried and true methods while at the same time covering the cutting-edge stuff.
Yeah, and Mark Sutton is still here with us. And that balance between sort of the tried and true and the cutting edge, I think, is what you experts bring to the show. Mm-hmm. We have our next guest here, which seems to be the perfect balance to the topics that you just raised, Linda Lysakowski, and that is the ever-famous, ever-wonderful Kay Sprinkle Grace is here joining us here on the Nonprofit Coach. Welcome back, Kay.
Thank you, Ted. This is, I can't believe another year has gone by.
I know. Can you believe it? Fifth anniversary.
It's so wonderful. What a service you have given us.
Oh, well, you're so kind. We serve around the round table here, virtual round table today. We have Mark Sutton from FrontStream, who was our very first guest on the very first show and has been on every anniversary show. And, of course, has been on shows in between as well. We've got Linda Lysakowski, who has just been sharing her thoughts. And Kay, the sort of the topic today is, you know, what has the Nonprofit Coach meant to the sector? But then I think if 5 years it's worth asking the question, should it continue? And if it does, why?
I think that because it's so current, it's so relevant, I think it has the advantage over, and Linda and I, you know, write books and everything. And, you know, by the time you write a book, everything's just gone. It's out of date. Because when I began reflecting on the 5 years, I thought, my gosh, you know, 2010, and it turns out I've just been going through old computer files, and I look back at 2010, and it seems like a decade ago, not 5 years ago. Our sector is changing so quickly, and I think that the value of what you've been doing for us, Ted, is that it's immediate, it's relevant, and because you are such a media sweeper, you are always on top of things, then what it does is it brings to light and brings informed people, including yourself, immediately around an issue. And I think I've only picked up on the last part of, Linda, what you were saying, but I do think that we're in a very precarious time. And I think we have to be extremely mindful not to throw out the baby with the bath. I think that we, you know, the flywheel is definitely cranking, but at the same time, we cannot leave behind some of the principles and the practices that have kept the ethics in our profession. And as others begin to come into our space, and I was just reading an annual report from a company in which I have some stock holdings. It read for all the world like a nonprofit report. In other words, the impact that they're having in the world, it happens to be a medical supply company, and the impact and how it all aligns with their credo, and they listed their credo. And so we are both informing but being crowded by others who will want to do what we do, only do it with more efficiency. And I don't think any of us would deny that we need to improve our efficiency. So I think, Ted, what this has done and what you do is you keep us current, you keep us mindful, keep us aware.
Well, thank you for that. And I think Linda did make a very important point, which I thought it was very good timing on the part of our producer, Diane Peach, to bring you in at this particular time, because you are, as you know, one of the top-rated, most popular guests on our show, so much so that we now reserve our last show of the year, our holiday show, for you, and you're always so kind to make that time available for us to sort of send fundraisers off into the holiday season thinking about how they can succeed in the new year. And it's always that mix of the tried and true and what works. And I think all of you are sort of making the same point here. But is it a point that people are listening to, that we're talking about change? And boy, 5 years ago, we were talking about change. And Mark Sutton, when we started the E. Flansby Foundation way back when in 2000, so we've got 15 years since the foundation of the creation of the E. Flansby Foundation. That was a lot of change then. It's been a lot of change for 15 years. So is change the norm, and is it creating fundraisers, professionals who can adapt to that change while maintaining a foothold in what we know works, which worked 15 years ago, maintaining a commitment to ethics, which in my opinion just is not even discussed enough anymore?
I couldn't agree, and I do think that what we're hanging on to, there's a wonderful phrase that Bob Waterman used in The Renewal Factor, which is a brilliant book, and he said we have to have the courage to take the best, leave the rest, and he said, but even more than that, we have to surrender the memories. And I unfortunately find some development professionals that cannot seem to surrender the memories. And whether it's that fundraising event that has not raised money in 5 years, but
Ethel is
the chair, and we can't hurt Ethel's feelings, you know what? You can. And Ethel will get over it if she is truly engaged in the mission. In fact, she'd probably be relieved. And we have some practices. You know, Ted, what I think? I think that one of our big flaws as a sector is that because we're so understaffed and we are so overloaded is that we don't do enough analysis of what we have done to see if we should keep on doing it. And I think this has been one of our grave errors. I think it's one of the reasons that we have lost some traction in certain ways. So I think that when we can focus on analysis, we do learn from what we're doing. But I also believe that this, the basis of what we do has got to be that ethical basis. And as somebody who was mentored by Hank Rosso, those many years ago, and the fundraising school, which he founded, was its tagline, was ethical fundraising. And that's what we have. We have that commitment to ethics, and we need to hang on to it, we need to grow it, and we need to shape our practices so that they are more efficient, they're more relevant, they are more, they maintain the trust that people have in us, and they still have that same sense of urgency of the need that we're meeting, but we don't lose the ethics in the midst of it.
Kate, let me just ask you, am I just showing my age when I suggest that it seems that those who are not of that generation view that as sort of the quaint ideas and not relevant to their work today?
I don't know that I agree with you. I think it is, in fact, I'm seeing among millennials that I've been coaching and getting to know, they have such a strong sense of ethics and integrity and purpose and commitment. Where I think we have some softness is in kind of the Gen X, younger baby boomers, who are also not our big givers, if you'll notice. Whereas
right.
millennials are turning out, they predict now, and I'm sure you know this, Ted, they predict now that the millennials will be the most generous generation since the greatest generation. Because they're giving all the time. They're giving their time,
right.
They're giving their money.
It's part of what they do.
It's part of their goal to change the world. And how that generation can be as optimistic as they are with everything that's been going on since they were born is simply astounding. But they are. So I'm not finding it there. Where I'm finding it is more in the mid-band, where there's slippage. And you see, I think analysis is the big hook into ethics. It's like when the Gates Foundation was doing its first malaria program in Africa. It wasn't working, so they stopped it. And everybody said, you can't stop it. Malaria is the biggest killer of people in Africa and children and everything. And they said, but this is not working. And then they found a program that did work. And now they are curtailing malaria.
And yesterday, as Mark Sutton noted earlier, I was in Toronto with our subsidiary here, CAF America. We have a subsidiary, CAF Canada, and woke up to the Toronto Star yesterday morning to an article that said nonprofits need clear donor rules, because the article went on to say that while they're touting at the Royal Ontario Museum the success of this big campaign, $23 million is left unpaid in pledges. And a sort of tracking a history of large donors who put their name forward for naming opportunities, but then sort of habitually don't pay pledges.
Yeah.
Is this just a race to the dollar and we're losing that quality factor?
Well, I think that part of it is our problem. I think once somebody makes a pledge, we forget to steward them. We put all our effort into getting the gift. We don't maintain a relationship that makes people feel like, I wouldn't let them down. Oh, my gosh, I've got this pledge. I can't give to you over here because I'm fulfilling this commitment to the Royal Ontario Museum. And I think that we have been so lax with analysis, and we've been very lax with stewardship. And our biggest problem, as you know, is that we have this horrible churn rate among first-time donors, people who give, who don't give again in 12 to 18 months because we pay no attention to them. But we are guilty as well, and particularly in capital campaigns, of putting all the effort into getting the gift and then thanking them and telling them how their name is going to be, you know, in this area of the building, and then we don't keep up with them. We don't engage them. We don't engage their minds and their hearts. And therefore, if we fail to build the relationship, then they don't feel any guilt about not paying it back and not, you know, paying off their pledge. And I think
it's sort of flavor of the month, right? It's like,
exactly,
you know, are we raising a tradition or a level of fundraiser that is always on the hunt but doesn't know how to say thank you and doesn't know how to store it?
Boy, have you hit a nerve with me on that one. I have talked with particularly university and high-end arts organizations, professionals over the years, and in fact, this was a huge topic at the Big Ten Development Conference a number of years ago. They had done a survey, and to a person, the highest response in terms of what they needed to feel really more professional and more successful was more time for relationship building. But everything is about the dollar. Get the money, get the money, get the money, get the money, and do not take time to, you know, what are you doing calling this person if it's not to get a gift?
Right.
And we have
aren't we doing that to ourselves? I want to ask Linda to chime in on this too, because it feels to me, and this isn't new, but as fundraisers, we're also professionals, and part of our job, I believe, is help train and educate the organizations that we work with on how to treat donors well, how to respect the gifts that they make, as opposed to allowing ourselves to be pushed into campaign after campaign, chasing the dollar, and therefore there just isn't enough time in the day and there isn't enough budget in your staff to be able to actually thank people or to actually focus on relationships. Is that true?
This is Linda, and I agree wholeheartedly with Kay. I can't tell you how many times I have gone in to an organization that's running capital campaign, and one of my first questions to them is, well, when was your last campaign? And let's look at the donors that you had from that campaign, and let's look at the volunteers you had involved in that campaign. And what I get in response is a bunch of blank stares that, those materials are somewhere in a box. We've never really followed up. They not only don't follow up with their donors, but they don't follow up with their volunteers that have been involved with the campaign. So naturally, when it's time to go back to them for another gift, for another campaign, 10 years later, this person may not have heard from that organization in the last 10 years. Maybe they've, if they're lucky, they've gotten a newsletter. But have they ever gotten a phone call? Have they gotten a visit?
As a profession, we talk about relationships, we talk about stewardship, but what happens time and time again is they become disposable donors, they become disposable volunteers, and we're moving on, and we're literally leaving people in the dust.
Right, and I think a lot of that is due to what you alluded to, or what Kay alluded to, I guess, was that the pressure is on from the board, from the CEO, maybe even from the campaign committee to bring in the dollars, and everything is focused on monetary gifts. And even when you're at the basic starting point of putting together a development plan, I ask people to look at their development plans, and it's all monetary. But we're going to run this campaign, and we're going to raise X number of dollars on direct mail, and we're going to raise X number of dollars in a special event. And I say, well, where's your plan for stewardship? Where's your plan for cultivation of donors? Where's your plan for research? Oh, well, we don't have the time and the effort and the money to spend on that because we're under pressure from our board to bring in the dollars. So that's all they focus on,
right,
is the monetary end of it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I had a conversation with a woman at this Big Ten conference years ago, and she just told me this absolutely chilling story of how she had ended up leaving a job because she had this amazing relationship with this older woman, and it was all based around gardening. The woman was a generous donor, but these two really got along. And the new vice president just simply blew up at her one day and said, "I'm not paying you to walk in gardens."
And it's not about relationships.
She couldn't pay me enough anyway. And she was out of there, and the story had just a delicious ending because the elderly woman had gone through some real thinking about a huge estate. She lived on a huge estate with fabulous gardens, and she was alone. And she had decided she was going to give it to the university. And when she called the university to talk to this woman that she was so close to, they informed her that she was no longer there. They told her where she was, which was at a private college in the same community as their vice president. She called her there, and guess who got the estate?
Yeah, because it was about relationships. But I will say, and I hope...
university. So,
and I hope, ladies,
yeah,
I hope in the final analysis, she did a favor for the organization that she left, by hopefully helping them understand the power of relationships. Listen, we've only got a few minutes left, and we've got one of the foremost experts in crowdfunding. So it's sort of bringing us from the tried and true and what we all know is about relationships to how now technology is informing nonprofits. Welcome back here to the Nonprofit Coach and our fifth anniversary show, John Murcott from Crowdster. Hi, John.
Hi, Ted. Yeah, congratulations.
It's great to have you here. We've got around the round table here. Mark Sutton is here from Front Stream. We've got Linda Lysakowski and Kay Sprinkle Grace, some of the most popular rated guests on the Nonprofit Coach. And John, we've just got about 8 minutes left here, but I want you to sort of bring us back, as we started with Mark, who's an expert in the digital space as well. I want to kind of bring this back to what fundraisers are seeing and what nonprofit organizations are seeing in the marketplace, and what is real and what is not real about crowdfunding.
Yep, and if I could put a pitch to you, Ted, if you don't mind, just for one quick second, you have a unique combination of two talents. Number one, you're hands-on and you have a good pulse on what's going on in the nonprofit space, but you also look ahead and you're visionary, and if you will, you look 5 years ahead. So when I think 5 years back, a lot of the crowdfunding and social giving, et cetera, that's going on now is stuff you were talking about 5 years ago. So when I listen to you now, I more or less think about what's going to be going on 5 years from now. So congratulations on that, and congratulations again on 5 years of doing this. But to answer your question, yep, terrific. So to answer your question specifically, though, the interesting thing is there is a bit of a relationship difference in some respects between donors and causes. And some of it could be that I was listening, you know, as you guys were talking, and some of it's that maybe the way that the nonprofits are communicating. But also there's just different ways that people communicate, and often it's through their peers. So how do people learn about interesting ideas or good products or good services or a cause that's important to them is through their friends. So, you know, one of the elements when communicating is not just actively doing the communicating from the organization to the supporters, but also giving tools, support, opportunities for those people that care about the cause to reach out on the behalf of the nonprofit, so on the behalf of the cause, to reach out to their network and friends. And that has two advantages. Number one, these are most likely being reached out to people the cause doesn't even know, right? They're the network, their social peers, et cetera, that the organization doesn't know. And number two, even if they could reach out to those people, it wouldn't be the same type of communication. You know, the way people, especially younger people these days, communicate through social media, it's quite informal, but it's very persuasive because it's friends telling friends this is a great cause and you should help support it. So these are things you've been talking about for a while, and I think more and more of that's happening now.
And John, and you always bring us very thoughtful. Kay, I want to ask you, because when I hear John say that, okay, what I hear is traditional fundraising on steroids. Because how is a traditional campaign successful? It is peers asking peers. It's who knows who in the community. Right. It's I can't say no to you. And social media has not changed that. It has enhanced that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. And I think that the fact that we're seeing it, I just wish that everybody would see it. If I hear one more time that millennials are not generous, they don't give, get a life. They are giving, giving, giving all the time. They just don't give in the way that we have been told they should be giving.
Right.
And we need to get rid of the shoulds because this generation is going to change the world.
You are so right. And I want to jump in because I'm watching the time here. And I want to share with you another trend in our marketplace that says exactly the same thing that you just said, and fundraisers just don't get it, and that's donor-advised funds. So
right.
Fundraisers don't know what to do with donor-advised funds. Some people rail against donor-advised funds because they're corporate, they're Wall Street, they're whatever. But guess what? Donors are giving, and they're giving billions of dollars. They're getting the tax deduction, and now they can be strategic about where they want to put those dollars.
Yeah,
and you
and
know what? They're popular because donors find it convenient. Social media is popular because people find it convenient. Crowdfunding is growing because people find it convenient.
Yeah, I'm doing a big article on donor advised funds for Advancing Philanthropy. And what I really strongly believe is exactly what you've said, but then I'm putting the onus on us. I don't think we come up with big ideas. I think that we just keep going back to people to close our budget gaps. We are singularly dull, except when we are doing big campaigns. And I think that what we could aspire to would be a time in our history as a sector where we didn't have these massive campaigns because we were extremely successful in igniting people's imaginations and having them push this money into our programs, our dreams, their dreams, as you know, on a year-by-year basis. And so my article is, which is still being written, is very much along the lines that, yeah, they're giving. And it's not entirely for tax purposes. They really want to give, but frankly, they don't know how. You know, they don't know where to put this money. And
yeah, I put the onus in the same way. I was interviewed by Paul Agassi for the same Advancing Philanthropy magazine. On that very, very topic. So I hate to cut you off, Kay, because you were always fascinating, and what you're saying is dead on. Donor-advised funds are good news for nonprofits, and fundraisers need to learn that it's about the relationship to the donor. It is not the relationship to the donor-advised fund, and there you can succeed. We have 2 minutes left, so I'm going to give each one of you an opportunity to say goodbye and for me to give you a big, hearty thank you on this fifth anniversary show. Mark Sutton, say goodbye.
Hey, Ted, thank you for having me on, and congratulations again. Look forward to talking to you next year and certainly in the meantime.
You got it. Linda Lysakowski.
Well, all I can say is I'm looking forward to the 10th anniversary to see what has changed and what the trends will be then.
You're wonderful. If 5 years sounded like a long time. Kay Sprinkle Grace.
Just to say thank you, Ted, for all that you do and for this opportunity always to share my enthusiasm and my joy in this profession with your listeners.
Well, and we always love having all of you on the show. And John Murcott.
To echo the 10-year anniversary, which I can almost hear 5 years ahead, Ted, and the stuff you're talking about now will be popular 5 years from now.
You got it. Well, thank you all, and thank you to Diane Peach, our producer, for bringing you all together here on our fifth anniversary. And we will be back live here on the Nonprofit Coach, of course, next Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern with a big show with Penelope Cagney and her big win of the AFP Skystone Award at the AFP International Conference. Thank you all. That's the end of our show today.
Thanks,
and the end,
Ted,
of our fifth anniversary.
Bye.
On
Thanks,
to
Ted.
Year six.
Thanks, Ted.
Remember, our you've been listening to the Nonprofit Coach Radio Show with Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcast at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Coach.